Blog Talk Radio.
Livingston, Montana. Dear Dr. Newhouse, no government hearing can take away the important work you have done on behalf of women's health. Thank you so much for your dedication and personal sacrifice. It is so appreciated. I am so sorry for the treatment the state of Kansas has inflicted on you and your family. You do not deserve this. Hang in there. We stand with you. And we'll do all we can to help. With love, Beth from Livingston, Montana. You're listening to Joyce Lindorf playing the harpsichord, A.P. Rosanola. I don't know how to pronounce it exactly. But I'll play that for out and read you some letters. Welcome to Radio Free Kansas Secular Sunday. Here's one called Double Time. Dear Dr. Newhouse, I am grateful that you have stood up for women that need you and hope that soon the target will be removed from your back and that your life will be repaired. with your work continuing. Thank you for your courage. Sincerely, Susan in Fort Pierce, Florida. Bonnie writes, I want to thank you for putting yourself in an untenable position by helping those women who so need you. I wish there was more I could say, but please know there are many of us who stand with you and applaud you for your courage, who continue to fight on your behalf and for women everywhere who are being robbed of their human rights. Also, Stephanie writes, Dear Dr. Newhouse, it is terribly disturbing that in this century we still find ourselves fighting the same old battles. The decision to have an abortion is a decision that no woman makes lightly. The far right's demonizing tactics are indicative of the depths to which they will go to push their agenda. Their theology is not based in biblical truth, and their tenacity is misguided. I am hopeful that there will be a way to overturn this decision, because you do not deserve this. It will be important for each of us to stand up and protest, because we are rapidly losing the rights and freedoms of choice that many of us have benefited from in the past. I am so sorry that you have been caught in their crosshairs. Sincerely, Stephanie. Heather writes for Dr. Newhouse, The progress people have made in history is almost always because there were people like you who took risks. Here is a review of what it took to get the vote for women. That great suffragist and excellent counter, Carrie Chapman Catt, that's C-A-T-T, estimated that the struggle had involved 56 referendum campaigns directed at male voters, plus, quote, 480 campaigns to get legislators to submit suffrage amendments to voters, 47 campaigns to get constitutional conventions to write women's suffrage into state constitutions, 277 campaigns to get state party conventions to include woman suffrage planks, 30 campaigns to get presidential party campaigns to include woman suffrage planks and party platforms, and 19 campaigns with 19 successive Congresses, unquote. You are part of a similarly important effort to allow women the right to control their own bodies and lives and decide when or whether to have a child. Thank you for what you have been doing. The struggle goes on stronger because you were part of it. That's from Heather. Lindorf on a harpsichord playing A.P. Rossinoli, the funeral procession of old women. Now listen, on another note, I'll get back to reading letters. There's lots of them. A note, you need to bookmark, go to the WordPress Brown Pakistan. The WordPress site Brown Pakistan. You can Google. You know how to Google. Google the word Brown Pakistan. That's BrownBakistan. That's all one word. Brown Pakistan. Istan. Brown Pakistan. WordPress. One word. Brown Pakistan WordPress. You can do a search. It will take you to that site. It is the most valuable site. Right now, for the next few days, it is very important reporters, writers, researchers, women, everybody who's concerned about women's choice should go to this site, especially in light of what happened today, yesterday, with the scandalous comments of Rush Limbaugh about Sandra Fluke, the woman who testified before Congress that Rush skewered on his show. I guess it was Friday. Anybody watching the news knows that this is a war on women. It is not exaggerated to say it's a war on women. Anyone who thinks otherwise is not with it. What is going on to Dr. Chris Newhouse, my sister comrade, is a tragedy, and it can be stopped and averted if we bring the people out of the streets, out into the face of the Board of Healing Arts. Information on all this is at the Brown Bakistan WordPress site. You'll find all kinds of stuff, including the now the transcript section is open. Anybody can download it and use the information for their purposes to get to the bottom of this. Especially, I will give you an example. There's the original Inquisition transcript that Phil Klein directed against Dr. Chris. And that Phil Klein transcript is worth reading because you see the illegal method Klein used in order to steal the patient medical records that Dr. Chris was seeking to protect. These medical records were used against Dr. Tiller subsequently, where he was found not guilty and then 2 months later shot dead. These records are also records being used against Dr. Newhouse by the Kansas Board of Healing Arts. Complete contact information, names, everything is at the Brown Bakistan WordPress website. Meanwhile, I'll get back to letters. This one is a little lengthy, but it means someone put some effort into it. Michelle, a women's studies major. She's a student of women's studies major. I wonder if she knows Sandra Fluke, who Limbaugh roasted. Here, Dr. The War on Women Rages On by Michelle. Dear Dr. Newhouse, I just want to send you a note of encouragement and support as you are yet another target in this war against women. Please trust and believe in the process and in knowing that myself and many others stand with you in support and solidarity. Maybe this injustice and the others that will unfold in the coming months will provide sufficient fuel to the fire to inspire women to take a stand. Right now is clearly the time for an uprising, as Governor Brownback proposes to destroy the lives of thousands more families who already cannot bear any more beatings. We are under serious attack. I don't know how these demons were able to pull your license, but there needs to be more of an outcry against the injustices against women. We are at an important crossroads as women refuse to live in the oppression of the past but continue to receive resistance from those who wish to keep the socially constructed roles alive. We must refuse to go backwards, but we'll have to join together in great numbers if we are to move forward. We cannot be lax about this. For every tender spot of weakness in our wall of progress will be tested by force. If we open our mouths and protest at each and every violation, something has got to give. Maybe if you write to the Attorney General and request an investigation into the waste and misuse that is so prevalent in varying degrees from county to county in Kansas, maybe we can bring forth much-needed change and ensure our success. With these cuts and the other bills they intend to sneak through on the backs of other bills, they are seemingly launching a very well-thought-out, planned attack against women and are trying to prevent our progression. Those days are gone. We must relieve them of their perceived duties of dictators. They don't want their corrupt patriot structure to be revealed and exposed. For example, Kern County DHS pays one doctor, Dr. Thomas V. Reese, $136,000 a year just to issue doctor's letters of denial to prevent recipients from obtaining legitimate medical exemptions and waivers. He writes out letters to the company of the welfare to work letters denying recipients the execution of their medical exemptions, as Dr. Reese claiming that his is a, quote, secondary, unquote, evaluation, either offering and even denying a person's legitimate doctor's determinations. The most stunning and telling insults, however, is that he issues his bogus determinations without even having examined, treated, seen, or met these people that he claims to know something about. Michelle says she has evidence of this, as he did this to me. I believe this to be a major ethics violation as well, as I believe it to be against the law. I would love to stand against each and every one of these injustices if given the opportunity. If you need assistance, please speak up, and maybe together we can use this seemingly negative incident as a promoter of a greater positive outcome. Sincerely, Michelle, a student in women's studies. Now, again, I'm going to direct you to the Brown Baptistan website that's just really only about 36, 48 hours old, and it's out there. It needs to be popularized. I encourage you to send it the link, bookmark it, check it regularly. You'll see that things are changing on it almost daily, especially as this March 8th hearing approaches in Topeka, Kansas. I'll put on another one by Joyce Lindorf. This was by AP Rossinolo, Acrobat on a Tightrope Dance. I'll be back with you. Bobby writes, "Stay strong, Dr. Newhouse. This too shall pass, and enlightened people will come together to raise the collective consciousness of all." Also, Diane writes, "People like you are so important in so many ways. Please keep going in whatever ways you can. Thanks for all you have done and for what you will do in the future." Sherry writes, "No doctor should be deprived of his or her medical license for political reasons." And that is true. I firmly believe that this is a political and religious persecution taken by Brownback and the far-right conservatives, the dumb conservatives in Kansas. We're going to break a little bit here in a little bit, and here is an interview done February 15th by my son Tristan Michael Cadell with chairperson of the Kansas Democratic Party, Joan Wagnon. I apologize, I used to call her Joanne. I didn't realize it was Joan. But here is here is Tristan interviewing Joan Wagnon, and you all know who Joan is. It was done February 25th.
Hello, this is Tristan Cadell for Radio Free Kansas here interviewing, interviewing Ms. Joan Wagnon. Ms. Joan Wagnon, well, first off, to all those who don't know, explain your position and in the current state of the Kansas Democratic Party.
My name is Joan Wagnon, and I am the chair of the Kansas Democratic Party. I'm a former state legislator for 12 years, former mayor of the city of Topeka, served for Governors Sebelius and Parkinson as revenue secretary, and have retired from state service. So I thought, what will I do with my life? I shall become the state party chair, and I'm going to make Kansas a better place by helping elect more Democrats.
Okay, well, now we'll get into the more sensitive topic later, but how about for now we talk about some of the basics, such as example, what is your current opinion on the brownback establishment, and how is it basically affecting the Kansas Democratic Party as it is?
Most Kansas voters would tell you today that they're very disappointed in the job that Governor Brownback is doing. He's cut spending on education, and they want those cuts restored. He's cut spending and has actually defunded the Arts Council, and people want arts in our Kansas communities. He's put forth a plan for funding schools that is dead on arrival in the legislature because it won't work. He's been trying to cut income taxes, and the problem is that he's going to end up raising everybody's property tax. So as far as Kansas and Governor Brownback goes, he's getting an F right now.
And people will like Republicans for low taxes. I find that kind of adorable.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
he's with Kansas Free Radio, and I'm...
Okay, so how about you tell us about the current state, how about your relations with the Kansas Farmers Union, led by Mr. Don Teske? What is your current...
The Kansas Democratic Party gives 100% support to the Kansas Farmers Union.
Well, short, sweet, and to the point. I like it. Okay, well...
You did good.
Okay, then, well... Okay, so, how about this? Now, how about we just go into this, skip all the boring stuff and go right to the crucial stuff? Because, you know, people like those. Sparks up a lot of inflame. Okay, so how about this? Now, this is a very sensitive topic, but give it all your heart. What is the Kansas Democratic Party's full stance on the abortion in conundrum currently happening in Kansas? As there's been plenty of dispute going on, it's almost becoming this... in bloody Kansas again. It might just come to that. Hopefully won't, but still, what's your current opinion on it?
The religious right and those legislators who describe themselves as social conservatives are doing everything they can to limit people's right to choose and direct their own lives. The Kansas Democratic Party's platform has always supported a woman's right to choose about her reproductive health care. The current assault on women's reproductive health is being led by a national strategy of Christian conservatives who are not very Christian and are actually not very conservative, because the conservative view would be to leave it to families to make those decisions.
Okay, then. Well, what is the Kansas Democratic Party's full view of the Obama administration, and how do you think is it aiding or hurting the current state of this country?
President Obama is our president. He's a Democrat. He stands up for the things that the national and state Democratic Party believe, and we will be happy to vote for him and support him in his election efforts in 2012.
Okay, then. Well, how about we go back to the Mr. Brownback for one moment. Do you think he'll be able to get away with a second term, or do you think people will be fed up with him by the time this term's over?
I can't speak to what he's going to do in the future. I just know that his agenda now does not resonate with Kansans. It is not a performance that they are pleased with. Kansans want to see education at the forefront, and he's not putting it at the forefront. Kansans want to see opportunity for all, and he's not doing anything to advance the cause of jobs. Kansans want people to be responsible, and the tax plan that he's put forward is not responsible because it will lead to an increase in property taxes, and it puts the wealthiest Kansans and corporations ahead of middle-class families.
Okay, well, what is your current opinion? What is the Kansas Democrats' party's full opinion? I know you're probably tired of hearing me saying this, but I like saying it because it gives me that eloquent feeling, but enough about me. So what's your full opinion on the Koch brothers and their current current stance in the corporate agenda?
They have a huge amount of money, and they're spending it on an agenda that is contrary to the Kansas Democratic Party. And thank you very much for the opportunity to interview you with you. I need to get back to my duties.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Well, this has been Tristan Goodell with Radio Free Kids. I started to cut it off so short, but Miss Wagman is a busy woman, and I'm sure she has to do a lot of stuff. So here, this is Tristan Goodell signing off for this interview.
Again, I want to remind you to go to the Welcome to Brownbackistan, the Brownbackistan WordPress site, where you can get all the latest updates and information, people to contact, petitions to sign, free petitions you can sign. And now the transcript section is open for any and all to download as PDF files, including the inquisition originally started by Phil Klein against Dr. Tiller and Dr. Newhouse. Also, I've been reminded to tell you to be sure and use Twitter and Facebook to popularize the website. We really need to get this out as far as possible, and I can't impress upon you the importance of it. Largely, these transcripts are provided by attorneys who have worked for Dr. Chris, and this last we're asking people to make donations to the law firm Kaufman. Excuse me. And the address, I'll read on the air later, but it's located at the Brownbackistan WordPress site. Just Google Brownbackistan WordPress. That's Brownback, I-S-T-A-N, and one word, WordPress, and you'll get there and bookmark it. Check back regularly, get involved. It's got an action page, too, for people to get involved. It gives the addresses of her attorneys, defending her largely pro bono, but these attorneys have to pay for the transcripts and the filing fees and the paper. So please consider donating to Dr. Chris's attorneys, listed there at the Brownbackistan WordPress site. Now back to, that was Polish Swordplay by Joyce Lindorf. I'm going to play another one, read another letter, and I'll give you some more news. Here's one called Hungarian Violins. These are all played on the harpsichord, written by A.P. Rossinolo, played by Joyce Lindorf. Here's another letter from Katie in Wichita, Kansas. Dr. Newhouse, first as a woman and second as a woman who works in the healthcare field, I'm deeply troubled by the witch hunts that seem to be ongoing against any doctor or medical organizations that are in place to help women in need or women who just need health care in general. I am truly afraid for anyone in the medical field at this point with Mr. Brownback in office. I am unsure of what Mr. Brownback and the Kansas government will think of next to punish anyone trying to give women's health care. As a woman, I am sickened to my very core that Dr. Newhouse has had her medical license taken. In the end, I would like to say, no one knows what in the heart of a woman but the woman herself. I would assume it is very easy to be pro-life when you're not the one getting pregnant. Thank you, Dr. Newhouse, for your sacrifice, and remember, always stand up for what you believe in. I believe in you. That's from Katie in Wichita, Kansas, and thank you for that letter. Well, now, again, I'm going to remind you, I can't impress upon you enough to take action by going to the Brownbackistan WordPress site and spreading the news around. There's many ways to share it. At each page, there's a share it Reddit, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's all the ways of spreading the news. We're really particularly interested in getting people to check out the transcripts and check out, sign the petition. We need the petition. Not enough people have signed the petition yet. We haven't got the word out yet. There's not enough traffic yet on the Brownbackistan WordPress site. Please consider signing the petition. Explore the site. There's a lot to it. Thank you. Here is back to Joyce Lindorf. I don't know how to pronounce this. It's the Steiermacher horn. 1 minute. It only runs 1 minute. I'll be back with you. Again, we're going to keep directing your attention to the Brownbackistan WordPress, the new website. You can go there. There's very pertinent information. We only have a few days left before the March 8th hearing. We have 4 days left to get this. The hearing will begin in Topeka, Kansas on March 8th. It probably won't be very long. We need your support now. We need your petition now. We need you to send letters. And there is a list. There's a site. On the Brownbackistan WordPress site, there is a page giving you direct links to the professional addresses, the Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts of many of the members of the Kansas Board of Healing Arts. We're trying to circumvent, we're trying to get this letter from Dr. Michael First at Columbia University, who comments that there is a letter there. You can listen, download the letter, read it yourself, send the letter to the Kansas Board of Healing Arts. Do not assume that everybody is doing this. To our knowledge, nobody's doing it. And treat it like nobody's doing it. Go to the Brownbackistan WordPress site, the new site, and find the letter from Dr. Michael First. There are contacts there, a listing of all the current members of the Kansas Board of Healing Arts. You can contact them, not at the office there in Topeka. It's, by that time, it may very well be too late. Instead, I'm encouraging you to call them up, mail them a letter at their individual addresses that are listed at the website, the Brown Pakistan WordPress site. A lot of work has went into this. It's very important that we continue with it. I'm approaching the beginning to the top of the second hour. The second hour is going to be a little bit more abrasive, more typical Radio Free Kansas listening. In the meantime, we got 18 minutes. I'll continue reading letters, many, many letters. Here's one from Tony. I support Dr. Kristen Newhouse. I oppose the Kansas political forces that colluded to strip her of her medical license. Freedom for women. That's what Tony wrote. And here's another one from Donald in Beelsville, Ohio. Dear Dr. Newhouse, you have stood at the cutting edge of the cultural wars and have taken a hit for all of us that weren't on the front lines. We admire the courage you and Dr. Tiller showed in the face of irrational hatred and irresponsible government. You have done much to make me feel better about our country. Your compassion for the needs of suffering women holds the moral high ground over the religious hatred of those who do not understand the spirit of Jesus, but selectively apply some rigid principle they ascribe to Jesus. Those of us who are not in harm's way owe you all the support we can give. You renew our faith in what this country stands for. Please know that for every one of us that takes time to express our support, there are many who feel the same way. Your life-saving work will be sorely missed. Sincerely, Donald, in Beelsville, Ohio. Now, I also would like to direct your attention to yesterday's program of Radio Free Kansas. It's titled Tell KSBHA, that's the Kansas Board of Healing Arts acronym, Tell KSBHA No, Part 1. You can hear Dave Lindorf and the president of the Kansas chapter of the National Organization of Women, Carrie Ann Rinker, hear their voices talking about it. And there's an important legislative update from Chairwoman Carrie Ann Rinker of Kansas Now, talking about the upcoming legislative attack. It certainly is a legislated war on women going on here in Kansas. This bill coming through, over 60 pages long, encompasses every anti-choice measure written across the country. Listen to the part one of this program. Use it. Pass it around. Again, go to the Brown Pakistan WordPress site. Do the petition. Download Dr. Michael First's letter. Send it to the people that are the board, the members of the board. We've been doing some counting. As far as we can determine, 7 or 8 of these people have already been appointed by Brownback. He has vetted them, I'm sure, not for their medical professionalism, but for their religious and political loyalties to him and to this far-right agenda that the state of Kansas seems to be officially engaged in now. Outrageous. You can get more from Dave Lindorf's This Can't Be Happening. That site has an article at the top of the scroll about Dr. Chris. You're more than welcome to pass that, send that article out, go to it, encourage people to read it. It tells it like it is, and it tells you how you can help and get involved. Here's another one. Again, at the top of the hour, we're going to go into some abrasive comedy by Lee Camp and others. We're also going to give you more updates as they happen about this case. Here is this again is from A.P. Rossinoli, Joyce Lindorf on harpsichord, Syncopation del Rishkar. We'll be back with you. Thank you. MJ in Alexandria, Virginia writes, "It is outrageous what has happened to you and outrageous what is happening to women throughout the world at the hands of frightened, misogynistic little men, and even more appalling with the aid and abetting of the same kind of women. Please know that my thoughts are with you. I offer you encouragement in your fight to get your medical license restored. Also, I want you to know that I and others are doing what we can to defeat these men, their mean-spiritedness to keep women down. Sincerely, MJ in Alexandria, Virginia." Also, Nancy in War Acres, Oklahoma writes, "Dear Dr. Newhouse, your courageous stand and splendid work have come to the attention of American women far and wide. I want you to know that you have the admiration and support of the majority of informed women, even in the so-called reddest of states, Oklahoma. I hope you will be able to continue your important work and that you will take comfort in your distress in knowing the publicity you have dared to engender is an effective rallying call for women's rights everywhere. You have our deep gratitude, Nancy, in War Acres, Oklahoma." Also, here we go with Charlotte writes, "From Arizona, you are on the right side of history, Dr. Newhouse, and the Kansas government and Governor Brownback are as out of step with the modern and future world as boneheaded John McCain. I am ashamed to tell people I'm from Arizona because of him and all the other dinosaurs from Arizona. We must hang together, for we shall overcome. Sincerely, Charlotte writes in Arizona." Dr. Newhouse, this is from Dr. Dawson. "Dr. Newhouse, they have tried to silence you and strip you of your dignity and of your profession, but they cannot. They might be able to take away material things, but they can never take away either your dignity or your knowledge and pride in being a physician. First, do no harm. They apparently have no concept of its true meaning. Think of how many people that you have helped in your lifetime, and just know that you will help many more. You have the support of women and fellow physicians who will not allow the practice of medicine to be stripped away by the radical fringe. Our daughter is presently in medical school, and we hope that she will have your strength to stand up to those who would presume to know what is best for each and every woman. You will have our support every step of your journey to regaining your right to practice medicine as it should be, a private matter between doctor and patient. Warmest regards, Dr. Dawson and Paula." Warren writes from Santa Monica, California, "Dr. Newhouse, I'm deeply distressed that you are being stripped of your medical license for totally political reasons by a male-dominated government that is fixated on the presumed, quote, evils, unquote, of abortion and contraception, but really seems to reassert total domination of men over women, the latter being simply playthings and sources of children with no value or significance in themselves. I grew up in the Depression days and in an atmosphere of increasing recognition of civil rights for all people. I find it hard to fathom why the Republicans and the so-called, quote, religious, unquote, right have chosen to fight more and more single-mindedly for the opposite. I can only hope that women will coalesce to override these bigoted men in their drive for arbitrary and uncontested authority." Warren writes from Santa Monica. Thank you. Also, Dr. Newhouse, Kinsey, "I was sorry to read about your treatment in Kansas. I, along with many others, truly appreciate what you have done. There is absolutely no way you should have been stripped of your medical license. If and when there is ever any justice, it will be returned to you. I am sorry you're having to pay this awful, unfair price for being humane, conscientious, and caring. Please hang in there. Your conscience is clear. Sincerely, Kathleen from Cincinnati, Ohio." Also, Shelley writes, "Dr. Newhouse, I am writing in a spirit of support to you. I have great appreciation for the work you have done on behalf of women in their times of need. As a psychotherapist, I appreciate the importance of attending to the mental health needs of women considering an abortion. Thank you for your good work. Sincerely, Shelley. Dr. Newhouse, we have been blessed to have you leading the good fight for us. Now it is time for us to back you up. What happened is horrible, but I have to feel that there will be repercussions in the coming election. Just look what happened with Komen, K-O-M-E-N. You are personally in my prayers at this awful time. Now that's signed by Rosemary Deal, West Palm Beach, Florida. Allison writes, Dr. Newhouse, I was outraged to hear that the political agenda of a few callous right-wing men has made it impossible for you to continue your important work. I applaud you for carrying on in the face of what must seem like insurmountable obstacles. I can only imagine how grateful the women you have helped must be. Your work, especially now, is vitally important as we witness the cruel and heartless bullying by these politicians to deny critical reproductive care to the most vulnerable in our society. Rest assured that you are not alone and that you have many grateful supporters. We will not give up the fight so you and your colleagues can continue to satisfy the promise of this country that reproductive rights are civil rights and that all women, regardless of their socioeconomic status, are entitled to them. Thank you so much, Allison. Dear Dr. Newhouse, in this letter you will be given the proper respect of your title that you so deserve, but I want you to know that I always thought of you as Dear Christine. Kristen, I wept when I saw the front page of the Eagle this morning. I don't know anything about the legal side of all this, but I feel certain I really know you, and I damn well know the ugliness taking place in Kansas. There aren't any words to make it right, Dr. Newhouse. We've all known they were doing their level best to make sure you'd pay dearly. I retired in February of 2001, but remember well your kindness and gentleness. Never have I met anyone as compassionate and caring as you, and I'm livid that you have to go through this. This I know, whatever laws they may conjure up and whatever punishment they may put on you, the truth will remain. You are a loving, caring, capable physician, and there is a much higher power who is aware of that. I really wanted to send this to you on my own, but since I didn't have your address, I'm very grateful Trust Women is doing this. You are loved, my dear, and many people are pulling for you. I don't have anything to give but words. I want you to have my contact info. Fondly, Fran in Wichita, Kansas. Also, Susan writes, thank you for your work with Dr. Tiller. Hang in there. It will get better. Sue, thank you for everything you've done. Thank you for standing up for and listening to many women that no one else would care about. Thank you. She is a student in Kansas City, Missouri. Carolyn writes that. Dr. Newhouse, somebody named Merle wrote, they've got their last names, but I'm not going to read their last names. I don't want them persecuted by people who listen to my show for the wrong reasons. Merle writes, and this is a pretty good one. We'll get in the spirit of it. What the hell? Is this not 2012? I can't believe it. They must want us to go back to the coat hanger days. If you don't believe in abortions, don't have one. It is criminal to force anyone to carry a child when they don't want to. Our society does so little to support women in times of trouble. How can we force them to carry a child they may not be able to afford to feed while in utero or give birth to in hospital, let alone be mentally capable for making rational decisions on maintaining their pregnancy or raising this child? As a woman of 60, I don't believe in abortions at this time. Who knows if I were to get pregnant what I would feel and who I am, just to say what is best for someone else. Who is going to support these kids born to mothers that have not been responsible during their pregnancies? These children frequently have many issues that make their lives very difficult. I sincerely hope there is some redress for your situation and you are able to get your license reinstated retroactively. You are doing your duty as a responsible physician, and most of us thank you for assisting women in their time of need. I wish people would worry more about how good they themselves behave and not stick their noses into an individual's right to control their own life. Thank you, Merle. I like that one. Even if you are 60. Now, my special request, we're going to liven it up here. We're at the top of the hour here. We're going to put up a little bit, start off to get things rock and rolling here. We'll go, we'll play some Jim Herman, Turnpike, you know, St. Patty's Day is coming, and then we'll move right on into some more stuff. Lee Camp.
You know the difference between the good and the evil in this world? The caring and the selfish, the Mel Gibson circa Lethal Weapon and the Mel Gibson circa Apocalypto? The difference is that bad people have plans. They always have a fucking plan. Good people don't have plans or missions or agendas. They just stumble through life thinking we'll all treat each other right if given the chance. Evil people have dry erase boards and PowerPoint presentations and iPad apps to keep track of just how the evil's coming along, whether it needs a course correction, because this quarter's evil is 3.5% lower than last quarter's. Good people don't have PowerPoints. Good people have donuts and word jumbles. For example, the billionaire Koch brothers funded a politician, Scott Walker, to become governor of Wisconsin. They knew that when he became governor, he would fake a budget crisis and he would act like it was the biggest budget crisis to ever hit the planet Earth. He would then pass a law that would destroy collective bargaining, the linchpin for unions. Hidden in that same law would be a provision that allows the Koch brothers to buy state-owned utilities for almost nothing, with no oversight. Both these things would make insane amounts of money for the Koch brothers. And on top of that, without union donations, very few Democrats would be able to get elected against the billions in corporate donations going to Republicans. With mostly Republicans winning elections, the Koch brothers would be able to purchase more and more of America. Now that's what I call a fucking plan. So that's what the evil people were thinking. During all this time, what were the non-evil people thinking? Man, do I like ravioli. Especially in cream sauce. If I work an extra hour at the shop, I bet I could buy 2 cans of ravioli instead of just the uno. That's what they were thinking. Bad people have plans. We don't have plans. I don't have a plan. You don't have a plan. Your plan was I'm going to watch internet videos. Meanwhile, Halliburton's plan was to cause a military coup in the sovereign country of Eritrea, a place neither you nor I ever knew existed. But they know, because they also have maps. They have dry erase boards and maps. I'm just saying the good people on this planet are never going to get the upper hand until we get some f***ing office supplies up in here.
That was Lee Camp. Way back, moment of clarity, number 18, I believe, way back when he first started. Lee Camp is hilarious. Hottest comic, I think, on the running the shit roads now. Here's another letter. Now, this is interesting, from Victoria down in Wichita. Dear Dr. Newhouse, I worked for some time at the Central Street Clinic in Wichita prior to your arrival. You know, back, see, I'll note, years ago we used to, Dr. Chris and I would travel down to they called it the Central Street Clinic in Wichita. She worked there, Chris worked there for a number of years. I have followed you for years and I am thoroughly pissed at what they have done to you. I know that this simple letter won't provide much, but you know that women from all over the Midwest place their trust in you, your services, and your strength. That has not changed. We still believe in you and support you. If we could do anything in the future to assist in your recovery of the medical license, please let us be there for you just as you were for the women that needed you. And that's from Victoria. Evidently, who remembers our work down there in Wichita. Here's one, too, a really short one from Elizabeth. I don't know where I'm from. My name is Elizabeth, and I'm in New York City and support women at this time, particularly doctors in trouble in the struggle about choices. Thank you, Elizabeth. Also, another short one from Brian. Dear Dr. Newhouse, please keep your spirits up even at this dark time. Remember, you are a hero to many. The long view is the most appropriate. Brian. His note of appreciation. Also from Jamie Williams, whole women's health, changing the world one woman at a time. And I read a quote in one of Julia Child's books, and it seems quite suitable on this occasion. Illegitimus non comberundum est, which basically means, don't let the bastards grind you down. That's from Janie Williams, Whole Woman's Health. Also another short one, Dr. Newhouse from Maryland in Wichita. It is hard to believe our government is so narrow-minded on this issue of abortion and contraceptives. Dr. Newhouse certainly has my empathy and my support in this matter. That's Maryland from Wichita, Kansas. Now, folks, that's just really about half the letters, but I want to finish today's reading of letters, and we appreciate them. I know she appreciates it. These were gathered by Trust Women's Representative Julie Burkhart. You can write her at burkhart.julie@gmail.com at Trust Women. This is information at trustwomenpac.org. And this is a particularly poignant letter, listeners. This is from the wife of Scott Roeder, the man who shot and killed Dr. George Tiller in his church. Dear Dr. Newhouse, I am so very sorry that the court stripped you of your medical license. It is so unfair and unjustified. You have done such great work for the women of Kansas, and all I can say is how horrible wrong this decision is. I only hope you know that there are so many people out there that do not go along with what the courts have done. It is an incredible tough time to be a woman. It's as if we are in some sort of time warp. I wish you all the best and hope that you can find some peace of mind in knowing that there are so many who support you. Sincerely, Lindsay Roeder.
Discipline. How many nights I prayed for this, to let my work begin. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. I don't like your fashion business, mister. And I don't like these drugs that keep you thin. I don't like what happened to my sister. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin.
From Rush Limbaugh's radio program immediately and permanently. He called a Georgetown Law School student testifying before Congress about women's access to birth control a, quote, slut, unquote, and a, quote, prostitute. His reprehensible remarks are an attack on all women, including women who are your customers. Here's what Sandra Fluke, a Georgetown Law School student, testified before Congress to protest the right-wing attacks to limit women's access to birth control. Rush Limbaugh called her a slut and prostitute. Here he goes. Here's what Limbaugh actually said, quote, "What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right? It makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. She's having so much sex she can't afford the contraception," unquote. Unfortunately, what Rush Limbaugh says matters. He has a bigger audience than any other commercial radio host in the country, and what he talks about on air has the power to drive the Republican agenda, an agenda that is already obsessed with radical backslides of women's ability to protect their own health. Sandra Fluke's testimony before Congress included important points about why access to affordable birth control is so crucial, including the story of a friend who had lost an ovary because she couldn't afford the birth control needed to manage her ovarian cysts. Rush's unforgivable translation of that was, quote, slut and, quote, prostitute. Sandra Fluke rightly has called Rush Limbaugh's comments, quote, an attack on all women, unquote. We agree. Every American enjoys the right to free speech, but that doesn't mean that advertisers who are accountable to their customers should pay people like Rush Limbaugh who make such appallingly hateful and sexist comments. Again, I'm reading from Becky Bond's latest email blast from Credo, C-R-E-D-O. Already, the mattress retailer Sleep Train has pulled its advertisements, explaining in a tweet, "We are pulling our ads with Rush Limbaugh and appreciate the community's feedback. Rush's other advertisers need to hear from us loud and clear. If you advertise on Rush Limbaugh, you're supporting his reprehensible attacks on women." In the fight against the Susan G. Komen Foundation, we prove that when women and the men who support them fight back against those who would restrict women's access to health care, we can win. And MSNBC's recent firing of commentator Pat Buchanan after a campaign protesting his white supremacist rhetoric shows that there will be consequences when certain lines are crossed. Rush Limbaugh has a long history of hateful rhetoric, but with his comments this week, Rush Limbaugh has crossed the line at a moment when women and the men who believe in equal rights for women are more organized than ever and are ready to fight back. We will not let the right wing take away women's access to birth control. We will not let Republicans brand women who assert their right to health care as sluts and prostitutes. Thank you for joining Credo and taking action to stop the escalating attacks on women and hold Limbaugh and the Republican message machine accountable. Becky Bond, political director, Credo Action from Working Assets. And now back to some more music. Here's one, Muse by Muse, Uprising.
Three Mile Island Disaster. Thomas Frank's new book entitled Pity the Billionaire, The Horrifying Swindle, Unlikely Comeback of the Right. A sharp-tongued liberal polemic from the writer who was one of the founders of an earlier book. He tried to get the opposition for a popular
swindle that you're referring to there in your title. Who do you think is being swindled, and who's doing the swindling?
I think all of us are being swindled. I wouldn't put a single name on who's doing the swindling, but I wouldn't say it's organic either. It's not an organic, naturally occurring swindle. I mean, it's something that we have been slowly talking ourselves into for many, many, many years, but of course the main culprits are the sort of stars of the conservative movement.
The conservative revival that you're talking about is being part of this swindle. You say this is unique and confounding, and I want you to describe what you're seeing as the paradox. You write about this on page 3 of your book, and why don't you read that section for us?
You got it. Before the present economic slump, I had never heard of a recession's victims developing a wholesale taste for neoclassical economics or a spontaneous hostility to the works of Franklin Roosevelt. Before this recession, people who had been cheated by bankers almost never took that occasion to demand that bankers be freed from red tape and the scrutiny of the law. Before 2009, the man in the breadline did not ordinarily weep for the man lounging on his yacht.
Well, let me ask you about that, Thomas Frank, because do you think the Tea Party was really weeping for the man on his yacht? And one of the main points of outrage for the Tea Party was they were opposed to the bailout. They were opposed to the government going in and helping the big fat cat.
Right, that's right. But they're also very much in favor of this kind of utopian free market world that they think we need to push towards. Let me take a step back here. The central paradox of our time is that we've just come through this extraordinary financial collapse. We know that this was almost directly the result of 30 years of bank deregulation and of all the sort of financial experimentation that our government encouraged. This disaster was caused by this ideology. And what the Tea Party movement and what the conservative revival generally is telling us to do is, instead of reversing course, instead of going back and saying, okay, maybe we should have a well-funded Securities Exchange Commission, maybe we should go back and break up the too-big-to-fail banks, what they're saying is, no, get government out of the picture altogether. We need not to reverse course, we need to double down on that ideology that we've been following all these years. Only when we get to that sort of pure state of complete free markets, then our problems will be solved. And until that day, none of this stuff matters.
In a sense, isn't one of the messages from the Tea Party, look, the government failed us in a calamitous way here, and the last thing we need is more government. What we need is less.
And that's a very appealing line. On the surface, the Tea Party line and the new revived radicalized conservatism sounds pretty good. They're asking questions that need to be answered. Why did the regulators fail? I mean, that's a really good question. Their theory is that, you know, it's government. Government always fails, right? The important thing is, what's the answer coming from the other side? What is, say, the administration of Barack Obama? What's their answer to the question? You know what it is? Nothing. They don't ever talk about it.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because you do make that point in your book that, as contemptible as you find the economic message of the conservatives, of the right, it's better than nothing. And by nothing, you're talking about Democrats, and in particular, the Obama administration.
Exactly.
Explain what you mean.
I call that chapter The Silence of the Technocrats, because the tendency among the Democratic Party, their great idea is that the Democratic Party is becoming the party of the professional class, who are a big Republican constituency, say 50 years ago, but now they're becoming Democrats. And the theme that just runs throughout everything that they do in the Obama administration and going back many, many years is to respect expertise. Experts will solve things for us. Take, for example, the stimulus package, massive deficit spending. Now, how do they go about justifying it? They're saying, well, the experts tell us to do it. You know, the Tea Party is saying, what the hell happened with the bank regulators? How did they happen to be asleep at the switch? Why do we have failure after failure after failure? From the liberal side, you hear nothing.
Your point, as you described in the book, is that the Democrats have been co-opted by the power of the market, and specifically the power of Wall Street.
Well, I'm not trying to be that blunt about it. I don't think that's exactly right. I think what it is with the Democrats is that their failure is that they trust expertise. And you look at who Obama, you know, appointed on his economics team. Some of them were very good, by the way, but the ones that really mattered are all from this sort of consensus economic school. And they regard markets not with exactly the same reverence, not with the same kind of utopian idealism that you find on the right, but they regard markets pretty highly, and they also regard Wall Street pretty highly. And a lot of them, look, a lot of them came from Wall Street. I mean, the bluntest critique is also very true.
When you think about the fact that white blue-collar workers have abandoned the Democratic Party in droves and overwhelmingly vote Republican, what does that say to you?
Two things. First of all, the conservative movement talks an extremely good populist game. They were out there less than a month after Barack Obama was sworn into office, waving signs in the Lafayette Park out in front of the White House with bullhorns screaming, "Let the failures fail." It was really appealing. One of their favorite books of 2010 was called The Ruling Class. It's this fire-breathing denunciation of the class of people that's supposed to be secretly, semi-secretly running this country. These people are waging a really terrific class war against what they believe to be the ruling class, and it is no surprise to me at all that it appeals to working class voters. The other side of the coin is, why have Democrats, you know, this is traditionally the party of working class people. Working class people elected Franklin Roosevelt president four times. How have they dropped the ball so dramatically? That is the great mystery of our times, and that's the other mystery that I've always sort of tried to explain. And the Democrats have real problems speaking that populist language.
Thomas Frank, his new book is Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle, and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right. Thomas Frank, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Melissa.
That was on NPR, National Public Radio. I thought it was pertinent because it gives you a taste of just how what we're up against here, folks, and what Dr. Kristen Newhouse is up against. And I want to read a section. Again, I'm encouraging listeners to go to the Brown Pakistan WordPress site. And this is an interesting. This is, by the way, it's a notice. The court transcripts are now no longer password protected. You could get there and actually go through the court transcripts and download them for free, study them. Here's a quote from The Pitch, one of my favorite newspapers, street newspapers in Kansas City, on the murky origins of the word Brown Pakistan. The whole Brown Pakistan thing is difficult to trace, having only been added to the Urban Dictionary back in June. The earliest reference to the, quote, pseudo-Christian fascist state, where the arts are not publicly funded, unquote, seems to be a posting to the Democratic Underground site way back in April. Now, here is something, an interesting post that was made by Dr. Chris, I think. The Kansas Board of Healing Arts Medical Board, Statistics for Dummies. If your odds of having been investigated by KSBHA are greater than 50-50, you might be an abortion provider. In other words, if you do provide abortion services in Kansas, you are more likely than not to have been harassed, investigated, censured, or stripped of your license by the Kansas Medical Board. Look for yourself. They publish it on their site. Just look for # fail. Dr. Newhouse's only legitimate investigation, that is, one in which the complaint was filed by an actual patient, was a case in which the patient testified during deposition that she had done so at the urging of her family in hope of financial gain after seeing a news story on television. This self-prejudicial testimony did not stop KSBHA attorney Kelly Stevens from putting her on the stand. That patient denied any complications at her follow-up visit and did not file a malpractice lawsuit. Everyone else, not so much if you do not provide abortions, your likelihood of being investigated, harassed, censured or stripped of your licenses, probably less than 1%. Here's a result from a Kansas City television, KCTV5's investigation, reveals that in 2008, the KSBHA board approved the license of another doctor with a history of medical mistakes and malpractice payouts. One patient died after a drill mishap in the operating room. A surgical error caused repeated electrical shocks to a second patient. And the third patient wasn't even that doctor's patient. The physician didn't notice, ended up performing brain surgery on the wrong man, and caused permanent damage. In contrast, Dr. Newhouse has never even had a malpractice lawsuit filed against her, much less lost one, in over 25 years of practice in the state of Kansas. If you need more proof that the Kansas Medical Board isn't preoccupied with regulating Kansas licensees' political orientation, there's a link here to just go check this out. And it's about the Kansas City TV, KCTV5's investigation. It's a link to there. Go to the brownbackystan.wordpress.com. You will not be disappointed, I'm telling you. There's a link to the articles, what you can do, updates, there's Tumblr, there's some really funny, great stuff, inspiring stuff on Tumblr. There's more updates and addresses on the legal defense, and of course the petition, which I'm encouraging. We're not getting enough people to sign this petition yet. We really only have a few days left to get this petition signed by thousands. Thousands of people should sign that petition. And I'll be posting on the Fighting Cock Flyer. There's a link there to take you back to it, so you can go to it. More information, but again, also, this can't be happening. Dave Lindorf's latest, the witch burners are alive and sick in Kansas. Stand up for Dr. Krista Newhouse against the Kansas theocracy's anti-abortion jihad. That's the headline title for Dave Lindorf's latest at thiscan'tbehappening.net. That's just thiscan'tbehappening.net. Go there. You'll see the article. It's a great article. It's got some great links, and it's informing people around the country. We really need to have other writers come in, popularize this case before March 8th. That is important. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I'm going to play a half-hour clip. Now, this is going to take you a little bit into the download zone. As I'm making contact, capitalism makes us crazy. Runs about a half hour, and I think it's pertinent. Remember, daily updates at the Brownbackistan WordPress site. Go there.
This week on Making Contact.
Most people who try most drugs don't become addicted. Most people who have a drink don't become alcoholics. Most people who try heroin, crystal meth, or cocaine don't become addicts. The real question is, why are the drugs addictive to certain people?
Humans have always used drugs, but current levels of drug abuse could indicate another problem. We may be driving people into addiction. So what's the connection between the increase in chronic disease, mental illness, and drug addiction in our society?
We take people who are abused to start with, and then we make them a social enemy. And they're the ones who make up our jail population.
On this edition, Dr. Gabor Maté talks about the relationship between mind and body health and what the rise of capitalism has done to destroy both. I'm Kyungjin Lee, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. From teaching to medicine, Dr. Gabor Maté's almost 40-year career as a physician includes running a family practice clinic, as well as treating the terminally ill and drug addicts. Dr. Maté specializes on the connection between society and addiction and mental illness. He's the author of several books, including In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, Close Encounters with Addiction, and Hold On to Your Kids, Why Parents Need to Matter More Than Peers. Today we hear excerpts from a speech by Dr. Maté, which he gave in November 2011 in Berkeley, California.
It's very interesting to look at the United States from the outside, of course, because your politicians are always saying, what a great country, the greatest country in the world. They all want to be like us, you know. And I want to ask you this question, psychological question. If you met some guy who kept telling you how great he was, and everybody wants to be like him, how would you diagnose him psychologically? Yeah, he's got a grandiose personality disorder. In other words, what he's actually doing is compensating for his deep insecurity. So that this is a country that, in its very rhetoric, betrays extraordinary insecurity. Now, I grew up in communist Hungary, where the joke, of course, was, what is capitalism? Capitalism is the exploitation of man by man. And what is communism? Its opposite. I grew up in a system that spoke the language of socialism, that spoke the language of struggle, of anti-imperialism, of equality and justice, but in its actual functioning was just the very opposite. And then I came to North America, you know, after the Hungarian Revolution, which was really an uprising against a very brutal dictatorship, and came to North America, and I bought into the American idea. And that lasted for exactly 4 years, between 1957 and the early 60s, when the Vietnam War started. And what became very clear to me is that everything that the Soviets had said about the Americans were true, and everything they said about themselves were a total pack of lies. So that the powers that be are oppressive and unjust is just how it is. And it doesn't matter in what guise. And this is not, by the way, an anti-communist rant. I may be one of the only two Marxists I know who came out of Eastern Europe. And the reason I say that is when they beat you up with the head in the name of a certain system, you're not going to be going for that system very much. And what I've actually come to understand that it's really important for people to search for the truth themselves and not to automatically identify with any particular system. Because as soon as you start to identify, as soon as you try to find the answer outside yourself, you may surrender your critical faculties. So if we hold on to our critical faculties and look at the truth, what do we see? In this society, what we see is a society that literally makes people sick. Because 50% of North American adults have a chronic illness. Either diabetes or high blood pressure or heart disease or cancer or any number of autoimmune illnesses. Now, according to the strict medical model, that's too bad. These people are just unfortunate. Because what the medical model does, whether with mental illness or physical illness, is it makes two separations. It separates the mind from the body so that what happens to us emotionally is not seen to have an impact on our physical health, number one. And number two, it separates individuals from their environment so that we try to understand individuals in separation from their actual lives. So that if somebody has cancer, well, that's just their bad luck. Or maybe because they smoke too many cigarettes. Which leaves us completely bereft of understanding what causes most of disease. And what they're betraying there is the complete poverty of understanding of what makes the human brain tick and what creates a human being and what causes people to behave and to function and to feel the way they actually do. Now, those separations are socially imposed, they're culturally defined, and scientifically they're completely invalid. Because the truth of it is that the traditional teachings of shamanic medicinal cultures around the world and of traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic Indian medicine, that mind and body are inseparable, has now been validated by modern science. So my profession, although it claims to ground itself in science and what they call evidence-based practice, I only wish they looked at the actual evidence. I only wish they would ask themselves, why is it that in the United States, an Afro-American male has 6 times the risk of dying of prostate cancer than a Caucasian? Well, it's got to be genetic. No, it isn't, because their genetic relatives in Africa don't suffer the same risk at all. So what is it in this society? Why are black women, even middle-class black women, more likely to suffer miscarriages in this country? Well, that's not a genetic question. It's a social question. There's something's going on here. If you look at something like the rate of autism in this country, or in industrial society, but particularly in North America, has gone up 40-fold in the last 50 years, or is it 30-fold in the last 30 years? Well, you know you can't be dealing with the genetic effect, because genes don't change in a population over 30 years, or even 500 years. There's got to be something going on in society that's driving the emotional ill health of children. And furthermore, if you look at addictions, there's a couple of myths associated with it. One of them is that it's a choice that people make, and the criminal justice system, which I think is a very apt way of putting it, it's a criminal system. The justice system is criminal. It's based on the very idea that people are making choices when they become addicts. If they're not making choices, why punish them for it? And the other idea is that it's genetic. And the third idea, of course, is that drugs are addictive, which is inherently nonsense. Because if it was true, then anybody who tried a drug should become addicted. But most people who try most drugs don't become addicted. Most people who try cigarettes don't become nicotine addicts. Most people who have a drink don't become alcoholics. Most people who try heroin, crystal meth, or cocaine don't become addicts. The real question is, why are the drugs addictive to certain people? What creates the susceptibility? What makes them vulnerable? When the American Army came back from Vietnam, fully 20% of the GIs were addicted to heroin. A few years later, only 1% was. There was a 95% cure rate, if you wish. Now, if in my work with drug addicted clients in the downtown east side of Vancouver, I had a 6% cure rate or a 16% cure rate, I'd be recognized as an international genius, because the cure rates are really, really low. How come 95% of these GIs, if the drugs are addictive in themselves, manage to overcome their addiction? Well, maybe we have to look at their lives, and maybe we have to look at the circumstances under which they became addicted. Furthermore, if you look at the Aboriginal populations of North America, these people actually had potentially addictive substances available to them. Not only were they available, they used them. There was peyote, there was alcoholic spirits in New Mexico. There was, of course, tobacco. But there was no addiction. If the substances in themselves had been addictive, and if these people were genetically predisposed, either or, they should have been addicted. But there was no history of addiction prior to the coming of the Caucasians. As a matter of fact, the natives used these plants. But what did they use them for? They used them in spiritual ways. In other words, they used them to elevate their level of consciousness. Whereas the very essence of addiction is to obtund your level of consciousness, because you don't want to be aware. So addiction is an escape from awareness, whereas the spiritual use of these substances is the enhancement of awareness. Now, if choice and genetics don't explain it, now we'd have to look at history. We'd have to actually ask, what happened to the native people in this part of the world that drove them into addiction? Now, alcohol has been known in the Western world for thousands of years, and there was plenty of drunkenness, even in ancient times. But there's no alcoholism, for the most part. Alcoholism came around in the 18th century with the rise of capitalism. You can make a very good case that one of the medical outcomes, or one of the health outcomes of capitalism, is addiction. In other words, can you understand people in isolation from the system in which they live? Well, the answer is that you can't. First of all, because the biology of human beings is shaped by the psychological and social environment in which they live. I can give you one example. Asthma. It's well known now, not controversial, that children whose parents are stressed are more likely to have asthma. Now, ask the average physician, what's the connection? They have no idea. And yet, if you ask the physician, how do you treat the asthma? You know how you treat the asthma? With stress hormones. With adrenaline and cortisol, or copies of it. This is how you treat asthma. I'm not going to go into the reasons why, but shouldn't the very fact that we're treating this condition with stress hormones cause us to ask, maybe stress has something to do with it? So in a polluted area where children are more likely to have asthma, it's the children of stressed parents who are much more likely to have asthma. Simply because the emotional stresses of the parents disorganize the stress response mechanisms of the child. And when women are stressed during pregnancy, their children have abnormal stress hormone levels, more likely to use addictive substances to soothe their stresses. That's because the emotional states of the parent have something to do with the physiology of the child. That's just how it works, because you can't separate the mind from the body, and you can't separate the individual from the environment. Now, if you look at the parameters of stress, what is it that stresses people? The research shows that what's most stressful for people is uncertainty, lack of information, loss of control, and lack of opportunity to express yourself. Now, when Karl Marx talked about freedom, he talked about freedom in three senses of the word. Freedom for him was, number one, freedom from economic necessities, freedom from the threat to life, freedom from interference by other people, and the freedom to express yourself, to be yourself. That's freedom. Now, what freedom is there in this free society, you know, the free world, the freest society in history? What freedom is there when people are not free of economic worry, where there's tremendous uncertainty and fear, lack of control? Well, when people lack control over their lives, they have no freedom. And they're physiologically stressed. And when they're physiologically stressed, that's going to manifest in the form of illness. So if you look at the California-based studies called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Studies, it looked at 18,000 people, 80% Caucasians, 10% Hispanics, 10% Afro-Americans. They looked at what happened to them in childhood and what the adult outcomes were. And an adverse childhood experience was something like physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, the loss of a parent due to a death, being jailed or a rancorous divorce, violence in the family, addiction in the family. For each of these adverse childhood experiences, the risk of addiction went up by 2 to 4-fold. So by the time a male child had had 6 of these experiences, his risk of becoming an injection-using substance addict was 4,600% greater than that of a male child with no such experiences. So the risk of mental illness goes up exponentially. The risk of physical illness, like autoimmune disease, goes up exponentially. And in Canadian studies, it's been shown when children are abused in childhood, their cancer risk goes up by nearly 50%. Why? Because you can't separate the mind from the body, and you can't separate individuals from the psychosocial environment. But if we understand human beings in their psychosocial context, what do we see? We see that stress is not just an abstract psychological event. It has physiological correlates. So when you're stressed, your whole body homeostasis, or the internal balance, is perturbed. And fundamentally, you have disturbances of the nervous system, increase in the heart rate, blood pressure, and in the stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, which play their job in helping you escape or to fight back in the face of an acute threat. But if you're chronically stressed, they actually create disease, thin your bones, suppress your immune system, give you heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, whole range of health conditions.
You're listening to Dr. Gabor Maté, speaking in November 2011 in Berkeley, California. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or 4 CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. We now return to hear more of Dr. Gabor Maté speaking about the connection between society, addiction, and illness.
Now, when it comes to addiction specifically, in the downtown east side of Vancouver, I never had a single female patient who had not been sexually abused as a child. And as were many of the men. And so it's always, the heart of addiction is always emotional loss. And the obvious ones are those losses incurred by those adverse childhood experiences identified in this California study. But there's another side to it as well. Because if you look at what's happening with this burgeoning number of children being diagnosed with this or that disorder, Not all of them were abused. Many of them were not. But what's going on? Well, as D.W. Winnicott, the great British child psychiatrist, pointed out, there's two things that can go wrong in childhood. First of all, when things happen that shouldn't happen, and that's the abuse and the trauma. And secondly, when things don't happen that should happen, and that's the presence of non-stressed, non-depressed, emotionally attuned, available caregivers. That's not available in a country where the average maternity leave is 6.5 weeks. That's not available where kids spend most of the time away from the nurturing adults in their lives in the company of other kids, so that they're forced to look to each other as their attachment figures. The desperation of kids to always connect, the sense of disorientation they feel when they can't connect with their friends by some electronic means. It's not a technological problem, it's an attachment problem. Those kids have been disconnected from the adults in their lives because the adults are not there for them. They can't be, they're too stressed. And there was a study a few weeks ago that showed that stressed parents, not unloving parents, but stressed parents simply are not as attuned to the emotional cues of their kids as they'd like to be. And that's what the psychologist formerly at UCLA, Alan Shore, calls proximal separation. Proximal separation is when the parent is physically there, but emotionally unavailable because they're too stressed and too distracted. And that's what my children experienced when they were small, because I was a workaholic physician. And this society rewards workaholism. They tell you what a great guy you are. They reward you for the very things that undermine the health of your family. And for a lot of people, it's not even a question of a choice. When under the sainted and behaloed Bill Clinton, the welfare laws were changed so that mothers could have only a number of years on welfare, then they had to go to work. Now, where exactly does a single welfare mother go to work? Well, usually at a low-paying job far away from home where she has to commute for an hour or two. And all that time that she's working and all that time that she's commuting, her child is in some daycare, inadequately staffed, with undertrained personnel. But what is that? Who does that kid got to connect to then? The other kids. And our children become each other's connection foci. And that means that for the first time in history, you have large numbers of kids, immature creatures, getting their modeling and their cue giving and their sense of direction and sense of values and how to walk and how to talk from other immature creatures. Well, what do you expect in that culture but all kinds of dysfunction? And again, that's not an individual choice that parents have made. That's just another way in which this system has undermined the necessary conditions for child development. A study out of Notre Dame University last year showed that the healthiest environment, actually, for child rearing is the hunter-gatherer society, hunter-gatherer village. And why? Because in the hunter-gatherer village, three things happen to kids that don't happen in our culture anymore for many, many kids. Number one, the kid's always with the parent. Well, that's not possible in this country. You know, civilized countries actually have paternity leave. Never mind the 6-week maternity leave. When the Puritans arrived in North America, they were appalled at the parenting practices of the natives. Do you know why? Because the natives didn't beat their kids. And to the Christians, this meant sparing the rod, spoiling the child. So that's the first thing. The second thing is when kids cried, they were picked up. Imagine that, picking up a kid when he's crying. We're telling people at 5 months, when kids are 5 months, 6 months, don't pick them up. You want them to become independent. We're missing the point that the way to promote independence is to invite dependence. Because people become independent when they feel secure in the world. So you promote independence by inviting dependence. But so these Aboriginal cultures, they picked up kids when they were crying, which meant that the kids' brains don't become overwhelmed by the stress hormones. When a child's brain becomes overwhelmed by stress hormones because he's not picked up, that has all kinds of impacts on the child's brain development because the brain develops in interaction with the environment. So even if you don't abuse kids in this country, but if you just follow the parenting practices recommended by the so-called experts, you're going to screw up your kids tremendously. And the third quality of a hunter-gatherer society is that children are brought up in the context of nurturing adults, not just the parents, not just the father, not just the mother, but that clan, tribe, community, and neighborhood that I was talking about before. So any system that destroys those conditions, that stresses the parents. See, if we think it's genetic, we don't have to ask what happened to black people in this country and what are the stresses on black males that trigger their prostate cancers. We don't have to look at what happened to the native people in this country that triggers their addictions, or to many other people, native or black or Caucasian or whoever. It's all in the genes, is an explanation for the way things are that does not threaten the way things are. Why should someone feel unhappy or engaged in antisocial behavior when that person is living in the freest and most prosperous nation on earth? It can't be the system. There must be a flaw in the wiring somewhere. And finally, let me just read you a quote from another chapter of my book on addiction. Detective Sergeant Paul Gillespie, head of Toronto's Sex Crimes Unit, rescued children from the purveyors of internet pornography. As the Globe and Mail reported on his retirement from police work, 6 years at that job had not inured him to the horrors that he witnessed. And this guy made it his job to find out where in the world was it happening that this child was being abused on the net. Then he retired, and a newspaper wrote, "Paul Gillespie still can't get used to the sounds of crying and pain in the graphic videos of children being raped and molested that he has seen all too often on the web. It's beyond horrible to listen to the soundtracks of these movies," said Canada's best-known child porn cop. "But it is the silent images of desolate children that tear most at his heart. They're not screaming, just accepting," he said, "of the infants captured in these pictures. They have dead eyes. You can tell that their spirit is broken. That's their life." Why the dead eyes? The dead eyes because the child can't escape, fight back, or seek help. The only way that they can possibly endure the trauma is to shut down their emotion and awareness of the pain. In this society, we have a massive emotional shutdown. And you can see it in the increasing violence in the culture. You can see it in the increasing violence in the media culture, that gory movies have to be more and more gory. Sports have to be more violent. People now have to beat each other to a pulp on television. Because we're so emotionally shut down, it takes more and more to titillate us. And the sex has to be more and more objectified, more and more salacious, really, because what used to excite people decades ago is no longer sufficient. Why? Because we're shutting down. And why are we shutting down? Because we're hurt so much. And the more we shut down, the more we need external sources of stimulation to make us feel anything at all. And in the case of the abused child, of course, the shutdown is obvious as to why it's happening. But the second point is that if that same cop, instead of quitting the force, had transferred to the drug squad, according to all the research, who do you think he'd be chasing in the streets? Those same kids that he didn't rescue. Because according to all the research and the brain developmental data, they're the ones who become the street drug addicts. Because they're the ones who are in so much pain that they have to soothe themselves with drugs. And then what do? We take people who are abused to start with, and then we make them the social enemy. And they're the ones who make up our jail population. So when we try and rescue them if we can, and if we fail to rescue them, then we persecute them for the rest of their lives. And that's what we're doing with this war on drugs. And there's no war on drugs, because you can't war on inanimate objects. There's only a war on drug addicts, which means that we're warring on the most abused and vulnerable segments of the population. And we could argue left and right what a failure the war on drugs has been, because you can see that it's not working. But you know what? I have a different point of view. If decade after decade after decade, the stated intentions of our policies are not being realized, in fact, the very opposite is happening, then is it really a failure? Or maybe is it serving some purpose? Maybe it's serving the purpose of maintaining the rationale, the raison d'etre, of law enforcement and a repressive apparatus that can be used against the people when the need arises. Maybe it has the function of demonizing a certain section of the population and increasing the fear in the rest of the population that justifies more repression. Maybe it has the function of keeping a whole legal apparatus going. Maybe it has the function of making a lot of money for a lot of people. Maybe it has the function of fueling the privatized incarceration industry. So maybe, after all, it's not such a failure at all. And from that perspective, was the Vietnam War a failure? No, it wasn't. It was lost militarily, but the end result was that the U.S. still gets to control the economies of Southeast Asia. Is the Iraq War a failure? Well, it is for the people who died there, for the 500,000 Iraqis or a million whose lives are lost, but it's not a failure for the American oil companies. So that every war, we have to be careful before we call them failures. Somebody wins. The somebody who wins are the same people who are destroying neighborhoods and communities. It's the same system that undermines human health, that undermines human dignity, that undermines human connection, that really makes life less tolerable on our planet. Now, we don't have to agree on what the solutions might be, and that's okay. What we do agree on is the importance of speaking the truth. What we do agree on is the importance of people getting together and struggling in a healthy way for a different life. Because if it's the loss of control and the isolation and the suppression of self-expression that are the greatest causes of stress, then surely one answer to the stress of this culture is to get together and to express ourselves and not to be silent and to connect with other human beings. Or as Joe Hill said, don't mourn, organize. Thank you very much.
That was author and physician Gabor Maté speaking in November 2011 in Berkeley, California. You can hear a full-length version of his speech at our website, radioproject.org. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to KPFA and SpeakOut. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Or check out our website at radioproject.org to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like Making Contact on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm Kyungjin Lee. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.